Hello, and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon, recording from quite chilly Nicosia, Cyprus. And with me from Ontario, Canada, I have Wasma Frog here. Welcome, Wasma.
Thank you. Hi, Magda.
Nice to hear and see you, Wasma. And to introduce you to the listeners, your CV is so impressive. I don't know where to start, but I will say that you are a woman, peace and security expert in terms of gender leadership, policy, and empowerment of women. I think the rest we can bring up in the conversation. Wasma, let's start off from something that is really close to your heart, the women of Afghanistan.
Yes.
Where can I start? You can start and tell me what you want to talk about, because I know it's an issue that's always there, but not always present online or in the media. So what is happening in Afghanistan, and what can you tell us about what we can do?
Sure. So thank you, Magda. Yes, my work, I've worked in Afghanistan for like 20 years. Sorry. And also for the past 4 years, I've been working and engaging and supporting the women's group. So it is very much and a very dear issue to me. And of course, it's my motherland too. As you know, like the world got engaged in Afghanistan very much following the 9/11 attacks in the US, particularly because the country was under the Taliban regime. It's a kind of a government that was very much, welcoming a lot of terrorist groups from many other countries, and at that time it was the Al Qaeda. So the world, United States and the rest of the world, the poor in Afghanistan, like they toppled down the Taliban very much like what we hear today. I'm sorry, I just have a bit of
no worries,
so that comes in. So yeah, they toppled down the government of the Taliban, and then we had a very new, kind of a new chapter opened up, where we started, going like a democratic process, like in a process which was like, and imagine democracy in a country like which had like civil war for so many years, and of course, it had the Taliban regime. It cannot be a perfect one. It was a very, very fragile and vulnerable democracy, but millions of women started going out, going to school, going to university. Women started going into the, getting jobs into the government. So a lot of, those milestones that we create for WPS, Women, Peace and Security, or women's leadership in the governments, those milestones we were actually hitting there. Until 2021, when the United States made a deal with the Taliban in 2020, and then in August 2021, the country was handed over to the Taliban again after 20 years of fighting them.
I mean, I can actually still remember that day like it was yesterday.
Yes.
This just, as you said, it was just a handing over, this blind belief of the West that the Taliban had changed.
The Taliban had changed, and they would actually be nice to women, and they would not close the doors of education and work for women. And then, this is where we are. The Taliban gradually, and very systematically started taking away whatever we had gained for 20 years, including education, women's access to anything outside home. So right now, the work I
can
do.
Can I interrupt you? They went so far as to take away women's voices by not allowing them to sing or speak publicly.
Sing, speak, anything outside home, even inside homes. Now, families have been actually ordered that if they have a window that's towards the street, then that window has to be covered so that the women cannot see the street. And so the women right now I work with in Afghanistan, they cannot get out of home. They cannot, work, go to work. They cannot go to school. They cannot do anything outside home, inside homes as well. The level of violence has gone very up. We have a patriarchal society anyway. So, the level of violence has always been very high.
Is it the level of violence generally or in the home?
Domestic violence against women, like women, like the continued, like even today, like this morning, a woman was literally killed on the street in front of, a government building by a young man that was known to her. So a lot of intimate partner and domestic violence, cases are like continuously coming up because there's literally no way the government of the Taliban does not actually, do any sort of accountability for women's murders and domestic violence that continues to happen inside homes right now.
And none of it is reported.
Of course not. No,
None of it is
no.
reported.
The Taliban Act not only reported, but, because in the 20 years, we started a lot of systems where women could actually go to the, judiciary and law enforcement and ask for help when they were subject to violence. So, in one of the provinces, in the initial years of the Taliban, the first 2 years, a lot of women used to go to the police stations, for example, or the family court. So then they issued a decree saying that no woman can actually complain about any male member of their family, and they cannot come to any of the police stations. So even they stopped women from, reaching out to the any law enforcement or complaining against any form of violence that they are experiencing.
Well, Wasma, how do you get in touch? How can you empower these women? Because do they have access to the internet?
That's the only thing right now that women have been having access to the internet, and particularly through smartphones. So, in the past 4 years, we have been working with, like, so right now I am engaged with over 300 women right now on daily basis through our online setups, but also through, many of my colleagues who work on the ground in Afghanistan supporting many women, getting home-based education, doing home-based businesses, or even started, community-based and very much, these. So women are very smart, as you know. They find out
Yes,
different ways
we are.
then.
We are smart.
And they find out these different ways of connecting. For example, in a province where, for example, there's literally no way that a woman can go and seek medical help. So this very small chain of TBA, like traditional birth attenders, nurses, female doctors, they have started this chain, for example, when there are domestic violence and survivors. They contact one of them, and then one finds a nurse to help her, finds a, for example, a doctor to help her. They have these sessions that run inside homes for mental health, for example. They have also created different self-help groups. So I hate to glamorize the situation, but what I see is like that resilience. Of course, it's a very cliche when we say, why do women have to show resilience all the time? But yeah, the resilience that we see in these young women, especially those who have, seen a lot of progress in 20 years and have lived in this is all their life. For example, they were born on 2020. 2001 or 2002, and they went to school, they went to university, they got into jobs, they had gyms, they had cafes, they went out, they had the voice, and so all of that, when it suddenly stopped, they do not remember the years of their mothers who went through very similar situation under the previous Taliban. So they have a very stronger resistance against what's happening right now. But of course, that resistance have different shapes. Some of them chose to come on the streets, but that very much, proved to be like very much risky. A lot of women were
It's
killed.
sometimes fatal. I mean, it can, it's a life threat. It's
They
life-threatening.
were, yeah, a lot of them were killed. A lot of them have disappeared. There were like rapes in jails and detentions. And not only women, but also their families. So there's so much, and especially in countries where there's this tradition and a traditional kind of setup. So then, and the Taliban, what they are doing is that they are punishing the men as well, besides the women. So if a daughter of a family goes to school or runs a home-based school or anything for women, they punish the father, the brothers, the men in the family, so that they also become so rude and so hard and so harsh on the woman. that we are being punished because of you. So that's
Sorry,
what, you know, that's like
can
kind of
I
the
interrupt you?
strategy.
Can I interrupt
Sure.
you? But you speak about resilience. I think resilience in the conditions you're talking about, there is not an option but to be resilient, or else the other option is to die or
The
just
other
fade
option
away.
is to die or just fade away. And a lot of women have, you know, kind of decided to fade away. A lot of them have decided not to fade away. So it's a complicated situation. That's why what you hear in the media, of course, you do not hear anything in the media about the women in Afghanistan. And because a lot of what's happening also on the ground cannot be shared, like, outside, for the risks and the security of these women involved. So, and the media in the world like to see things, like to kind of see sensations, and so see, you know, things that can actually give them that short-term dopamine. So that we cannot do that for Afghanistan, and women have actually literally disappeared from the international media as well. So you hardly hear anything about them.
But you see, I mean, you see it with Gaza as well. Now that
Yes.
there was technically a ceasefire, I mean, that word, it's an insult. Gaza is no longer mentioned.
Yeah,
It's
despite
solved.
the fact that people are dying every day, right?
Exactly. The ceasefire was an illusion because it hasn't stopped death or suffering or people freezing or being hungry. And it's
Yes.
also now being taken over by what's happening in Venezuela. So
Yes.
people, it's what you say, people need that dopamine rush,
Yes.
the
Yes.
adrenaline rush, and then
Yes.
we carry on because, I mean, we've forgotten about the people in Afghanistan, we've forgotten about the people in Yemen, in the Sudan, in Myanmar. I mean, we forgot because we want that rush, that
Yes,
first
quick and
rush.
forget and get back to our business. Yeah.
So tell me more about the programs you do, because I think it's, when did you leave Afghanistan?
Right before the Taliban took over, so I came for a treatment, actually. I had a an issue, a surgery that needed to be done, and then,
I
you
hope
know,
it's
the
over and it was dealt with.
yes, it of course it's dealt with, but, you know, like, of course, dealing with the aftermath. But anyways, yeah, so then after that the Taliban took over, and then not only like did my focus in the past 4 years of the Taliban return, but also years I'm living in Canada, has also been both, you know, in Afghanistan, but also in the region I'm living right now, where I've worked with the Afghan women. For example, Canada, you know, accepted over 70,000 Afghans in the past 4 years. And that's a very big number of, you know, Afghans, and a lot of them settled in our region, where I am. And I've been kind of supporting the women newcomers who have returned from Afghanistan, and finding them ways, because language is a major challenge. And then a lot of very similar challenge that they had in Afghanistan. They continue going through domestic violence. They continue to go through family challenges. So, but and sadly, a lot of men in these families don't, you know, overnight change, thinking that using violence is not allowed in this country, at least.
But I think,
But
sorry to interrupt, but I think it's also got to do with the fact that you also can't expect the woman to suddenly come to a new country and assume they know what their rights are, or they might even not want to change. It might serve
of
their,
course,
because they're not confident. As you said, language is a big issue.
language is a big issue. The systems, how do the systems work? But also culturally, you know, they are not raised to ask questions. They are not raised to, you know, object to what they go through. So there's a lot of challenges that women have. So there's a group that I am part of, so the supporting, you know, women of like Afghan newcomers. It's 97 families, and you know, like, on daily basis, some of their challenges are very, very, very kind of serious and quite, you know, disappointing. But yeah, that's part of it. At the same time, I also very much engage internationally as a WPS expert, because it's also important to see that, you know, those of us who have worked on the ground for so many years, and who have, like, you know, created that understanding of context, how
Yes.
context actually, you know, is everything, right? Like when context makes or determines the impact.
Exactly.
So that's something that I kind of, I engage with universities, with think tanks in academia, and kind of, bringing that perspective that I, as a, as an expert who has worked on the ground, as a practitioner who has worked on the ground, what do I mean about these international human rights policies? What do I think of, for example, women in peace, women, peace and security paradigm, in on a very much in a local kind of language, and what does it mean? So that's also something I've been working on, and I've been part of like this book, amazing book that came up from Georgetown. Sorry, George Washington University, and as well as focusing on these local expertise and how these resources on the grounds are actually the context for change, and also kind of worked with a number of other universities here in Canada, University of Ottawa, University of Montreal, very much on bringing those perspectives out.
I have to tell you an interesting story. At the beginning of 2025, I was part of a 6-month project mentoring young Afghan women in the diaspora. And the young woman, one of the young women that I was mentoring, very focused, very smart, from a family that really pushed for her to be independent, very supportive. And what she ended up doing, because she was seeking asylum, is she was actually helping some of the Afghan women navigate simple things like having their own bank account or dealing with things, simple things, which is not that simple when you've never done it before, but it's the first step because we all know that economic independence is the basis of everything. So she, in the beginning, she was a bit not sure if she was doing the right thing. And I said to her, girl, go for it, because you need you on the one side and you need people on the ground with them, actually helping them with the simple things like having a credit card and going shopping or managing money, going to the supermarket or looking for what they can do with their kids or how they can learn the language that they're not always dependent on the man in the family to communicate. So I think she was really awesome, and it took a while for her to gain confidence in herself that she was actually doing the right thing. But I kept on reminding her that, you know what, not everyone has parents like you, that's parents and brothers. She also had brothers that support you. So you be that to these young women that have come and are floundering because they're more isolated than they used to be, because now they don't even understand the language and this is foreign. So it's really interesting to see, because they both need to work together. You need to work at the grassroots level of people actually learning to be independent.
Yeah, learning to be independent and using the resources that they have. So, for example, like through our organization, that's what we have been focusing in the past 4 years. A lot of my colleagues who have actually come to Canada, we started, like putting our kind of structures together and, coming together, supporting, helping each other. Of course, that has been the first thing, because they cannot be of help to anybody else if they are not, at a kind of ease themselves. So, like finding ways to support each other, and then now they are all like kind of finding ways to support their, sisters in Afghanistan. So it's amazing how women, make these magical things happen when they come together. And like I have hardly like seen, such a like that kind of, setup, or that kind of, zeal in many other community groups. But anyways, like that's what these women have done. Like women who have come to Canada, not only they are building their own lives, for example, they are trying to kind of find ways to support other women. Like right now they are finding educational opportunities, they are doing so. We also run these English classes, we do not have a single dollar for that or any single, penny for it. So what we are doing is like everybody's just, a volunteering. Somebody volunteering from the, Washington, somebody from, London, from another country, from Canada, all over the world who are, diaspora. They are just, contributing 2 hours a week and kind of supporting. And like they even find ways that they all contribute so that a young woman in a province in Afghanistan can buy a tablet and get connected. So all of that is like literally amazing how these women have been. I wish we were able to actually rule the world and in a better way that we wouldn't
I'm
have
with you, sister.
this much of militarization and wars right now we are experiencing, right?
No, and I know this. I know it isn't always the case, but what you've seen and what we all see is this collaboration, this tribe. There's a formation of a tribe that we support each other because there's something I can do that you can't do, so I help you. Or there's something you can do and another friend doesn't know how to do, so you can teach her. There's something you can do that I don't know and you can help me. So I think this way of helping each other is a lot more female, and I hate to stereotype, but I think it's a lot more female because females have often we our voices are often silenced. So
And that
we
lived
need to support
experience,
each
right?
other.
Yeah, and it's not, it has maybe it has no biological aspect, but it has more social reality, right? That's how, because women are living the way they are living. Like, for example, I remember my mother, and all, like, she was always like, we used to call her like that, somebody who would find a solution from the dust. So that's what we used to call her. But like, she would use everything to the maximum level, all her relationships, if she needed to resolve, for example, an issue. Like, let's say there was a marriage in the family, the woman, the girl was not happy, and then my mom would use all these different ways of reaching to the family. And the way she would use it, like, we would really, I would say, mommy, you're just making things from the dust, like you can do anything from, like, and that's like so interesting, because, and then she would say, we have to do this because there's no other way. So women, like, it's not like just because they are women that's what happens, but it happens because of the social fabric of a woman's life. They have to use all the resources to maximum level. They have to cope. They have to find out solutions. They have to actually survive. So all of that really kind of teaches her how to, kind of use different methods in life to make things happen. And the biggest thing is that she doesn't want violence. She doesn't want wars because she has seen that this is actually taking so many things away from her and the family and everybody else. And that lens of the family then turns into a lens of the community and then society at large. So that's why I believe that, like, women, if women, more women ruled the world and became part of, global politics, maybe we wouldn't have been, seeing this much violence and militarization that we see on the ground everywhere.
I think it's exactly what you're saying. It's a case of a woman see the what war does. Men just see winning or losing. They don't see the ripple effect of sons dying or daughters getting raped or families being displaced or no food or no people getting shot and there's no access to emergency rooms. So I think And I think like the idea where you say it's a social lens rather than a gender lens, because they, I don't, I think there are also men that are
Of course.
three-dimensional. But I think it's this thing that the people that are left behind during war are the ones that actually understand that it's not about winning and losing because everyone's losing. So we've got to find a way out of it.
Exactly. And also at the same time, this whole concept of how men look at win, and you said winning very, rightly. The winning, and there's an ego attached to winning, right? I was reading the book, the suffragist piece, where actually it has been proven, like, more than 20,000, piece of research have been actually reviewed over like a century, where they have actually proved that democracies do not actually are not very interested in wars and militarization, not because of just being in democracy in itself, but because of women's right to vote, because and women's access to government. Because what happens when women get into the government, the budgets started changing, you know, the questions, the accountability from the politicians started actually taking shape, and women who became governors, women who became parliamentarians, all of that, they started looking at if a woman, for example, was the head of a government department, her focus was very much on what was needed rather than, you know, creating those winning, kind of milestones. And that's very interesting.
So tell me a little bit more. Have you got any other particular project you're proud of? Although I'll take another, have you got a project you're particularly proud of or work you've done that you're particularly proud of? Although I think we all should be proud of everything we've done because whether big or small, if you've affected one person.
I think, you know, in the past 20 years, particularly under the Republic era, where I was working on in Afghanistan, there has been like so many instances where, like, you know, our work actually made a difference, particularly in the legislation. And me being a human rights lawyer, for example, my focus on the first elimination of violence against women law that the country got, for the first time in history, we were able to criminalize any form of violence against women, you know. That was a very, very big thing for us. And then getting, these prosecution units in every province. And the women that I had actually, you know, engaged and supported and mentored, they started becoming prosecutors. So when I started going to different provinces, you know, these women were like prosecutors supporting, you know, cases of domestic violence using the same law that I had worked in together with so many other women. Like it has always, despite the fact that that law has been dismantled by the Taliban, the structures have been dismantled, but the same prosecutors that we had trained, the lawyers, for example, on the ground, they are still on, like, you know, not all of them have left the country, not all of them have had the opportunity. So they have found different ways to provide, you know, support to women and particularly survivors of domestic violence and other family
The
violence.
whole thing, Wasma, is that the minute you give women information, they will find a way to use it. So whether it's in a courthouse making decisions or implementing a legislation, or whether it's in a little conversation with two or three women over a cup of tea, they will find a way to use that information because it's there. The
Exactly. It's power,
legislation
right?
might have been dismantled, but the information is there, the methodology is there.
Exactly. And the awareness and the sensitivity that has been created. And there's something else that I'm working actually right now and also in the past 4 years. So remember when the Taliban took over, everything got kind of scattered around. And, you know, like, a lot of my colleagues who left the country and some of them who stayed behind, the idea was like, okay, we closed down the organization. We were working on women's leadership, women in peace, for example. That has no kind of scope anymore, right? Let's go home, like close the doors. I said, no, let's find another way. Like, if we actually brought, like, in. Once things got the dust settled in September 2021, I remember, you know, having this meeting with over 200 women on Zoom. And we said, like, should we close down and go? And then the answer was very clear, no, we would find a way to do things we used to do differently. And that actually was so powerful. So all of these women, they turned into like, so these were like the women who you were like deputy governor. So right now I work with a woman in one of the provinces who was a deputy governor, who was a university professor or director of a government agency or director of a woman organization. These women, for example, a woman engineer, for example, who has no kind of scope to work anywhere right now. So they all like started different, kind of initiatives like education, business, for example, you know, cultural activities, different things, you name it. And right now, for example, a lot of people think that because many of the women leaders from Afghanistan have fled, so maybe this women movement is closed, is over. But no, For me, the fact that, millions of women are on the ground every day, they wake up with the hope that, okay, today I'll do something that will actually prevent my daughter from being beaten, that will help her, learn something, or I'll help her to get, some sort of a connection so can, she can do an online class. That those are the women I work with. And that's something that's so powerful. And these women have, like, so now we are also kind of putting together these different bits and pieces of a community. So we have actually stepped a bit out of the home where we are doing more community engagement. Very, very, of course, low profile. We the women are aware about the risks that, for example, we have had detentions in the past 4 years that were very painful as well. So women are very, very much aware of the risks involved. So, but like these women, the way they have started. So, in the seven provinces, we have started with seven women leaders, and each of them are working with 50 other women. So, like,
Wow, that
literally, that
sounds awesome.
it's.
Magnificent. That sounds
Sorry.
awesome that you've done it so broadly and systematically.
And that's happening. So we started from, one province, and now it's seven province, seven women leaders. We got a little bit of, support for them, and they are like doing these community engagements where they are doing this community mobilization of other women. So it's like, sowing the seeds. I might not see the impact, in my lifetime, or I might see, who knows, but I see that the movement seeds or reseeding or rerouting is actually happening.
Your daughter will see the seeds. Your daughter will see what flowers. But what I'm interested in is, and I think you know we're all interested in, is how do you address us mental health? Because this issue, these things that are happening are under a lot of pressure. Okay,
Yeah.
so how is the issue of a mental health addressed? Because we've all seen ourselves and people around us burn out. How do we address it? Because it's really, really important.
Like, as somebody who spent literally 2 years going to the hospital every week thinking that I had a heart attack, and then the doctors would say, no, your heart is fine. It's not a heart attack, it's a panic attack. Like, this happened very much after the Taliban, in that burnout you're talking about that trauma accumulation that we like kind of put inside, and we think, okay, I'm doing, let me do this one thing and then I'll think about it, but then another thing comes up, so we continue actually burning ourselves out. And at the same time, a lot of women who go through this, so there are different levels of how mental health kind of our mental health manifests. When you are actually inside the crisis, you hardly notice it because
Yes.
you don't see what's happening, right? Because the whole focus is very much on survival, on kind of continuous, like, that is like, I have to do this, I have to do this, I have to make this happen, I have to rush this. But then once kind of you take a step back, or that issue is addressed, or that crisis is addressed, and then the body starts actually kind of yelling that no, it's not over. So I think, a lot of women, and that's what I see both. A lot of women in diaspora that I work with, they are going through this, not PTSD, but like the trauma that has been accumulated inside all these years, and now that there's a bit of, kind of security that they are experiencing, so it's actually coming out in forms of a lot of mental health, but also a lot of physical health, and that being
Ultimately comes out in physical health. It affects
it
you mentally, but
ultimately
ultimately
comes
comes out in physical.
very much true. And then also I work with the women on the ground who are actually, then very much go through like very severe sort of depression on the ground, and because they are going through, they literally a nightmare. So we have a different kinds of support, but what has worked, which I kind of find it very interesting, is our group healing. So when we started these individual counseling, a lot of people didn't sign up for it because it's a stigma. People do not feel very safe to say, to put themselves forward and say, I need this individual help and all of that. But then I'm so proud of this team, Amna in the UK, that has been helping a lot of our counselors train actually in group healing as well. And the group healing was so powerful. It started actually, when a group of women, six, seven women come together and they learn about how to deal with stress, what is panic, what is depression, and how the body responds. So one woman stands up and says, "Oh, my daughter is going through this. What do I do?" And then another woman starts crying and says, "I'm going through this. What do I do?" And then, the conversation starts taking place, and the facilitator tries to provide, the information and the scope that they can actually, or different skills that they can use. So that has been something that we continue working in different provinces right now as well, where we do home-based group healing, but also online group healing for so many younger women mostly. But I see that, the mothers, because I'm working with two different levels, like the mothers, the women that were like women leaders of the past 20 years or more, but then the generation that actually found, their themselves and kind of in the past 20 years, and they are women in their 30s, women in 20s, or even women like younger than 20s. So they actually go through different levels of right, stress and depression right now. But women and the group healing have been very helpful. That's something that we continue doing right now.
But I think the group healing brings us to a point and something that's really important to me and to you, because we're both part of a storytelling project. And it's the whole idea that when you bring people together and make a safe space for them, when they can actually speak about what's troubling them, that's one step towards healing. It's one step towards healing, and some of us need it more and some of us need it less, but all of us need to hear the stories, and all of us need a safe space in which we can actually say what's bothering us. And I think that also helps with burnout, because when you actually talk about it, first it comes out of you, so the you put it out there, so it's not in you and making the wound worse. And you also realize how important or not important it is, because sometimes when you keep things in you, you can make them much bigger or much smaller than what they are. But when you actually say them in a space, you put them into perspective, and you also put them into the perspective that it's happened. I'm still okay. I'm talking about it, and I can move on. So to me, storytelling is a very important part of the work that we do. It's underestimated because it used to be associated with what we used to tell our children, tell them stories before they go to bed. We didn't associate it with ourselves. We
That's
didn't
true.
associate it with the fact that however old or young we are, we have a million stories inside us. And some of them need to come out. And some of them we need to share. And some of them we need to share, because if I share something, you might hear something similar, which means you're not alone.
That's so true. That's so true.
Because we're coming to the end of this conversation, Wasma, is there anything you want to share before we close?
No, I think, this is lovely, when women come together. Like, it's so powerful when we talk about solutions, right? And it's amazing. We just talked about solutions, in the past 40 minutes on how to find solutions. Rather than, talking about things that would boost our egos. So that's so powerful. Thank you for the opportunity. Yes, thank you.
I thank you for coming on the show. I always say that to me, one of the reasons I do these podcasts, it's actually my form of therapy.
I get it.
Because I hear stories and I get inspired, but I also am able to share stories, which helps me move on. Because we all have stories that trouble us within us, and we all have some really awesome stories. So this podcast has offered me the opportunity to share. And it also, as I said, it saved me a lot of money in therapy.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Wasma, thank you very much for being
My
here with
dear.
us. Carry on the good fight.
Thank
And
you.
look forward to seeing you again in real life sometime
Yes.
soon.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
And
Have a great day.
to the listeners, thank you for listening, and let's hope 26 is a much better year than 25. So let's keep the faith and
Let's
carry
keep
on
the faith.
and carry on doing the good fight.
Yes. Thank you so
Thank
much.
you.
Have a great day.
You
Bye.
too. Bye.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.